Well, good morning. It's a privilege for us to be here today to talk about the challenges, the economic and demographic challenges facing Minnesota in the next few years. And I've got to confess that we're both a little intimidated, too, because we've spoken to a lot of groups over the years, but we've never spoken to a room filled with as many people who can actually get things done as today. And there are policies that need to be put into place to deal with the challenges that we see facing the state over the next few years. We have a single presentation. We're going to alternate back and forth quite a bit, but it's a joint presentation, and we make it a joint presentation because it's things that we both believe in. It's not my thoughts. It's not Tom's thoughts. It's our thoughts. It's our concerns that we're talking about. It's our shared professional opinion. Now, this morning in the first presentation, there were seven big ideas, and then there were four items of concern, and then there were three factors to look at. We have three factors, too, and the factors are pretty easy. And I would, you know, if you're just going to take one thing away from this presentation, here's what you should take away. Here's what's important, the three things that are important for Minnesota's economy looking out 10 years, 15 years, and 20 years in the future. Productivity. That's what we're going to be talking about, and that's what you need to take away from this. Now, I'm going to start out with a quick view of where we are today. And it should be familiar to some of you, because you've heard this before. But there are two reasons why we do this. One is because it's a good story, and economists, practitioners of the dismal science, don't get to tell good stories very often. And second, it's hard to get where you want to go if you don't know where you're starting from. So with that, now, the question is, oh, have you got the clicker?
Yeah, okay.
Okay, let's start. And the bottom line is we're starting from a position of strength. We've gone from a predominantly resource-based economy to one that's a manufacturing services-based economy, a diversified economy. Now, we're going to have to make a transition again, but we've made an enormous transition in the last 40 years. And at the same time we've made that transition, our economy has grown faster than the U.S. average. Our economic growth rate has exceeded the U.S. average, and I'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute. Our population growth rate has been stronger than most states in the Frost Belt. And we rank with the leaders on many social and economic indicators. Now, let me show you just how strong Minnesota's economy has been. Personal income per capita is what economists would say the best measure of the standard of living in a state is. And if you look at that on that basis, in the 1960s, we were at 95% of the U.S. average. Today, we're 108% of the U.S. average. In the 1960s, we ranked 25th among all states. Today, we rank 9th. Personal income per capita grew at an annual rate of 6.6% between 1960 and 2005. The U.S. average was 6.2%. We grew almost a half a percent faster, compounded annually. And since 1960, personal income per capita has grown faster in Minnesota than in all but 11 states, and almost all of those states were states in the Southeast. Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, those states. Those are the states that have grown faster. This is really a remarkable record. There are no fancy statistics here. This isn't starting point or ending point sensitive, and didn't all occur just in one period or anything like that. This didn't occur everywhere. The states that grew faster than Minnesota were not around in the upper Midwest. They were further south. And it's just really a terrific result and a result that we take for granted.
And Minnesota really is a remarkably successful state. And in fact, We are one of the most highly employed states in the nation, and consistently so. If we think in terms of the proportion of adults of working age who actually have a job, Minnesota consistently is at the top of the nation. And in fact, if direct comparisons are sometimes difficult internationally, but if we look at the international comparisons, Minnesota would rank as one of the most fully employed economies in the world. And because of that, we get to enjoy some really wonderful benefits. We have one of the lowest poverty rates in the nation, and consistently so. We have the highest home ownership rate. We have the highest rate of health insurance coverage of any state in the nation. We have one of the lowest disability rates of any state in the nation. Our families tend to be much more likely to be stable families, and we have one of the highest educational attainments in the country. And a couple of the indicators I really like to look at, because they're composite indicators by large organizations on a national basis. The Annie E. Casey Foundation consistently ranks Minnesota as one of the best places in the nation to raise children. And the United Health Foundation consistently ranks Minnesota as having the best health access and health outcomes in the nation. We are a really successful state.
Let me tell you one other change that occurred over those 40-plus years. Education in the state. In the 1960s, less than half of the workforce in Minnesota had a high school degree. More than 90% of the workforce in Minnesota now has a high school degree. It's a pretty amazing change when you think about it. Now, there have been some other pretty amazing changes, too. This is what's happened to the structure of the state's economy. This is the percentage of output in the state coming from various sectors. And there are a couple of things that stick right out at you. One is, in the 1960s, we were a resource-based economy. Almost 20% of the output in the state came from the resource-based sectors, agriculture, mining, forestry, and the associated manufacturing, food processing, paper, lumber, and wood products. Today, we're down to less than 6%. The other thing that's happened is that the services-based economy has grown, and it's grown enormously. We're more than 22% of the economy is in the services-based area. Now you can say, those may not be good jobs, or those hamburger-flipping jobs, but they're not hamburger-flipping jobs. The services-based economy is healthcare, one of the real growing areas for the economy. So this is the good news. The good news is that Minnesota has been performing well.
But not all Minnesotans share in this prosperity. We have many and growing regional differences in income, education, health, and health access. Some areas of Minnesota are declining in population. Some areas have been doing so for a very long period of time. We have some groups in our population that have lower incomes, lower educational attainment, less access to health care. Not everyone shares in the kind of success that we do enjoy.
We got concerned about this, and we thought we should take a look at it a little bit and see what actually has gone on regionally in the state. So one Friday afternoon, we sat around for a few hours and decided we were going to draw some boundaries for regions in the state. And everybody knows that rural Minnesota is not homogeneous. Everybody knows that it's not a one-size-fits-all area out there, and so we drew some boundaries again, came up with five what we ended up calling as rural plexes, and one metroplex. And the metro area here extends really from the St. Cloud area clear down to the Rochester area, as you can see. Now, when we look at this, we can see that there are some significant differences between the rural plex or the rural plexus, depending upon how you want to make a plural of a word that we made up, and the metroplex. Oh, now, okay, there we go. One of them is in per capita personal income. Per capita personal income in the Metroplex is almost 50% more than in the Ruralplex. Now, there's a difference in cost of living, too. Housing is a lot more expensive in the Metroplex than in the Ruralplexes. And so that may not be a totally appropriate statistic. It may not reveal fully all of what's going on. But look at what's happened to population growth. That's an important thing, too. And there are other differences, the percent minority, percent with less than a high school education, percent with higher education degrees, and the percent below 150% of poverty.
And we see huge differences in population growth around the state. The Metroplex has continued to see particularly strong growth, particularly in the suburban ring. And in the suburban ring around the Twin Cities, six of the counties in Minnesota, Isanti, Chisago, Scott, Carver, Wright, and Sherburne counties, are in the top 100 growing, fastest growing counties of the nation. This is a remarkably growing area and a very vibrant and strong economy. We've also seen strong growth for a long period of time in the Lakes area of north central Minnesota, particularly the Brainerd-Baxter area up to approximately Bemidji, and then over to Aitkin County and increasingly the Pine County area. But then in some of the areas in northern Minnesota, western and southwestern and southern Minnesota, we've seen some areas of much slower growth and some areas of long-term population decline, particularly in southwestern Minnesota, where we've seen population decline. And the way this happens is it's generally the younger people who move out of the area, creating very old populations. The life experiences that people have in different areas of Minnesota can be radically different.
Well, there's one thing that's interesting when you divide the state up into Metroplex and Ruralplex. Actually, there are a bunch of things that are interesting, but being an economist, I'm always interested in income and what's happened to income. And what's fascinating to me is that if you look at this, what you see is that in terms of income growth, the rural plexes haven't lagged the state average in general. What you see is that the statewide average of growth was 7.1% over the period 1970 to 2000. The Lakes area, 7.2%. Up north, 7.4%. The Northwest Valley area, 7.2%. And the metro area, 7.2%. Now, there were two areas that lagged the state, southwest and southeastern Minnesota. But if you look, even southeastern Minnesota, which was 6.9%, grew as fast as the national average. This is really a remarkable result for a state. It's not to say that we shouldn't have done better, and it's not to say that we couldn't have done better, and it's not to say that we don't need to do better in the future, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. But still, we're starting from a position of strength. And we're starting from a position of strength because we had some really far-sighted private and public leaders 50-plus years ago who made decisions, put policies in place that laid the foundation for the record of growth that we've seen. What they recognized was that there were challenges brought on by the baby boom, and they made wise investments as to how to deal with that. We argue that education and the state's commitment to education has been a key contributor to the state's success over the past 50 years. Well, we've come a long way, but here's the real question. What about tomorrow? And here's Tom to talk a little bit about that.
And one of the things that's already come up about tomorrow is a subject that perhaps many of us are familiar with is aging. Now, aging, as it turns out, is a pretty normal thing for people. I do have to explain one of these demographic, mathematical, I hope there aren't anybody here with math anxiety, but it's one of these demographic mathematical theories that we have is that most people on average age somewhere in the neighborhood of 1 year every 12 months. It's a fairly regular process, and it allows us really to predict. Well, we didn't always think along those lines at once upon a time, but it's something that we can use as a prediction to look into the future. But there's something else operating here. We're not talking about, that's normal. It is normal for individuals to age. What we are talking about here is something that is not normal. And if we go back into the history of societies, we really can't find any society in history that went through the kind of aging process that we're seeing. Now, Europe and Japan are much older than we are. Minnesota is almost, I hate to say we're average in anything because we're such an exceptional state. But one thing we are almost exactly the national average is our age structure. So when we talk about Minnesota's age structure, we're really also talking about the national age structure. And countries such as Canada share a very similar characteristic. And then there are younger countries such as China that is younger than we are, but they're moving in the same direction. They're also aging. Much of the world is going through this aging process. We've never been here before. We don't know exactly what the long-run implications are, but we do know that they are fairly important. But there are some markers that I think we can look at that are fairly important and fairly dramatic. The next four years. Now, it just so happens that coincides with some people's terms of office. But that's not the reason why I say 4 years. The next 4 years is going to be a critically important time in our future history. A critically important time in our future history. We are going to begin to see sharp changes in our society. See, demographics is normally sort of glacial in its pace. But what we have is a couple of very sharp demarcations from the past. Starting in about a year and a half, in middle of 2008, we will begin to see a sharp increase in the number of people reaching age 62. Between 62 and 63 is the age at which the average American retires. We are expecting and incidentally the average Minnesotan is also the same age, we are expecting to see large increases in the number of people retiring at that time. And then in 2011, that's 4 years from now, 3 years and 50 weeks, not to make too fine of a point of it, but the first wave of this very large boom generation begins to turn 65. How do we know they will begin to turn 65 then? Well, it's the 1 year every 12 months thing. We're pretty certain that, and we have a pretty good idea of about how many people we are going to be looking at. And so over the next decade or decade and a half, we are going to see a large increase in the number of people reaching retirement age, while the increase in our population of prime working age 16 to 64, is going to grow ever more slowly. And the number of children in K-12 education has already begun to decline, and we will see virtually no change in the number of children in K-12 education over the next decade and a half. And the number of young people in of higher education age, which has been growing fairly rapidly for some time, will begin to decline beginning next decade. Changes are already being noticed in the future. Let's look a little bit more closely at that 18 to 24 year old age population, because I believe that's an especially precious age. an especially precious age. If we compare that against the 65 and older population, what we see is that historically those have been, in Minnesota and the nation, almost identical in size. Almost identical in size in population. They're beginning to diverge now. The 18 to 24-year-old age population is not quite growing as rapidly. In 2011, the divergence begins to accelerate as the number of people reaching age 65 begins to skyrocket, while the number of young people of 18 to 24-year-old age is fairly flat, even declining in some years. Now, why do I say these people are particularly precious? Well, these are the young people that will be the business leaders of tomorrow. They will be the legislators and the governors and presidents and other leaders of tomorrow. They will be our scientists and engineers. They are the people who are going to keep the value of our retirement funds up so that we can enjoy our retirement. They're the people who are going to take care of us when we get old. And they're the people who are going to, I am absolutely convinced of this, they are going to be the people that will find a cure for diseases like Alzheimer's. These are precious people. These are important people, and these are really our future. So that gets us to economic fact of life number one. Some of you probably had a two-semester class in economics, and it probably bored you to death. And so let me just give you the entire course in about two sentences. And this is basically most of what you need to know about economics. There's only two ways an economy grows. Only two ways. Having more gold is not one of them. The Spanish found that out a long time ago. After they came to the New World. There's only two ways an economy grows. You either increase the number of people making stuff, or you increase the amount of stuff each person makes. That's it. There are no other alternatives.
Now, just a second, Tom. I've got to defend the economics profession here. You need to go to school more than a week in economics. Okay. If you go to work the second week, or go to school the second week, what you find out is this, that if the ratio, and we're going to get into a little math here again, but if the ratio of workers to residents decline, if you're going to stay even, if you're going to stay where you were, you've got to have that productivity increase. And what are the implications of the results that Tom had here? The implications of the demographic results are that we are going to need to increase productivity just to stay even. Now, it's that simple. We're going to have fewer workers supporting the population, and there will be no increase in our standard of living unless we have productivity increases. Now, let me show you just real quickly here. Oh, there we go. A pattern that's a little bit disturbing. This is something called the dependency ratio. And what it shows is the proportion that we have of workers, the number of people being supported by each worker or by 100 workers. And what you can see is that we have the smallest dependency ratio over the next few years, and then it's going to go up. The implication is that the dependency ratio is going to start increasing, that we're going to need further increases in productivity just to stay even. These are really the good times. These are the times when we have the opportunity to do something about that productivity.
And one other aspect of this is that if we look back in history, we can see that the dependency ratio in the past was actually higher than it will be in the future. But the difference is back in the 60s and 70s, that higher dependency ratio is because we had more children. And we were investing in young people and their education. We were investing in the future, and many of you in this room were part of that investment. And we are beginning to reap the benefits of that investment. In the future, what will be driving that increase is an aging population and a disinvestment in people as they grow older. But those are longer run issues. Sensitive clicker. Those are longer run issues. Let me return back to the short run and why I'm a little concerned that we've known about this effect ever since these people were born. They're now in their late 50s. This is not a new issue. And in many respects, we really haven't done much about it. But we've known this day is coming. And if we look at when people turn 62, and again, 62 is the average age at which Americans and Minnesotans retire. If we look at when the people who are connected to the workforce right now, when they turn 62, what we find is that right now, literally this month and for the next year and a half, that we have a relatively modest number, and then that is followed by a 30% increase. That's the kind of increase that we never see in demographic numbers. This is a huge ledge. This is a huge jump. It is the same thing that drove hospitals almost crazy in the late late 40s and through the 50s. And just simply, how do we have enough capacity to be able to accommodate all the babies that are being born? And then we had to build all sorts of schools for these young people and train teachers. And we did that. And our parents invested in that. And they built the junior high schools. Then they built the high schools. And then we built the colleges and universities to accommodate this large generation. And now this generation is beginning to reach towards the end of its expected work life. And a dramatic change will take place. This is not business as usual. And if we return to the longer run and think in terms of growth of the workforce, and remember, as we pointed out, you either increase the number of people making stuff or you increase the amount of productivity, the amount of stuff each person makes. Growth, economic growth, is dependent upon both of those, and in the future, the growth in the number of bodies in the workforce, the number of people making stuff, is going to slow dramatically. And in fact, this shows a gold bar that actually is a forecast of our projection we made earlier this decade. And frankly, right now, I think it's optimistic. And these projections they are on the optimistic side, and yet they are showing a dramatic decline in the rate of growth. This will not be just a Minnesota phenomenon. This will be a phenomenon that we will see around the nation. The difference is that Minnesota is already one of the most fully employed economies in the world. We have very little room for future increase. We share with North Dakota the highest proportion of adults who are actually working. We have the highest participation rate of women in the paid workforce. We have one of the highest participation rates of men in the paid workforce. The vast majority of Minnesotans are already working, and we have relatively modest room for increases in the future. And this search for talent, this is that Economist journal again, the search for talent is becoming a major issue in Minnesota and the nation.
Actually, as you found out, the Economist isn't just a U.S. publication, it's an international publication, and this search for talent is a global challenge. And it's not just a search for the best and the brightest. We need to be able to make the most of every individual's talent in there. Each individual needs to be as productive as possible if this economy in this state is going to succeed and grow the way it has in the past. That's the challenge that states and regional economies have looking on into the future, making the fullest use of everybody's talent, because labor is going to be scarce. So the way you're going to grow is you're going to grow through more productivity. Now, let me show you real quickly here a graph that shows the growth rate for the crucial 18 to 24-year age group going off into the future. Now, this 18 to 24-year age group, Tom's talked about a little bit, but that's the new entrance to the workforce. That's what we've got to be aware of. And what you can see is that Minnesota actually, from 2000 to 2005, was in pretty good shape. That age group was growing faster in Minnesota than it was nationally. But then you see for the next 5 years, we're going to almost be flat. That age group is not going to grow, and it's going to grow faster nationally. And then it's going to shrink. It's going to grow more. It's going to fall more than the national average over the next decade as well. This raises some real interesting questions about where is the labor force going to come from for business for the Minnesota economy in the future. It raises some real interesting questions about higher education, about tuition policy. I don't know about you, but I think that it's probably going to be easier to recruit somebody off the campus from the University of Minnesota than off the beach in San Diego. That's one of the things that we have to begin thinking about is as we have this decline in the number of people of working age, how are we going to make sure that we have good access to that workforce that we need in there? We need to prepare the entrance to the workforce in such a way that they will be successful and they will be productive as they go on. Now, what kind of jobs are we going to have to be preparing them for? A consulting firm, McKinsey & Company, says there are really three types of jobs in the future. There's jobs called transformational jobs, which transform raw products into useful consumer products. There are transactional jobs, or jobs where the interactions can be easily scripted or automated. And then there's what's called tacit jobs, which require complex interactions requiring different levels of judgment, jobs that are know-how as opposed to know-what or know-why. And this tacit economy, these tacit sector jobs, that's the growth sector of the economy. It's about 40% of the labor force now, and about 70% of the jobs that have been created since 1998. These are the jobs we need to be preparing Minnesotans to fill in the future if we're going to continue our record of strong growth that we've had over the past 50 years. Now, here's another economic fact of life. Everybody's concerned about the income distribution. There were questions about the income distribution in the earlier panel. But the simple economic facts are that workers can't be paid more than the value of their marginal product. If you're paid more than the value of the good that you're producing or the service that you're providing, the firm's going to go out of business. So how do we attack, from an economic point of view, the problem of income distribution? What we do is we make sure that workers' talents are fully used, that they're as well prepared as possible for the global economy. And this is going to be more of a challenge than it was in the 1950s and the 1960s. Technology is changing more rapidly. We can't change the the structure of the workforce as easily as we did before because the base of the workforce, the incumbent workforce, is so large. And yet there are all kinds of changes going on. So we need to begin thinking about how do we upgrade the skills of the incumbent workforce. K-12 education is important. Immediate post-secondary education is important. But the biggest part of the workforce are the people that are already working. 80% of the people that are going to be working 10 years from now are already working. If we're concerned about maximizing talents, we've got to be thinking about that group as well. So here's the outlook for labor force over the next growth over the next few years. What you can see is you can see that more people are retiring than entering the labor force. The natural growth rate, the number of people that enter the labor force minus the number of people retiring, beginning in 2010, begins to shrink. It drops by 12,000 between 2010 and 2020, drops by 75,000 between 2020 and 2030. There's not much room for increased participation rate. Sure, we may work a little longer. We may work a little beyond age 65 or 66, but the increased participation rate is going to be difficult. Where's the growth going to come? It's going to have to come from migration. In fact, all of the growth that we have in the workforce between 2020 and 2030 essentially comes from migration.
And that's really the difficult component to forecast, that we have a pretty good idea of what the natural change is going to be. We even have a pretty good idea of what's going to happen to the participation rate, what proportion of adults will be in the paid workforce. But the difficult item is having a sense of what will happen to migration, because it has an interplay with what is happening here versus every other state and every other country of the world. And we characteristically have people moving here from other states, people moving from here to other states to take advantage of jobs. And that job growth becomes a major factor in both our economic growth and our population growth. That you really sort of need to have a reason to move to Minnesota. You don't get here by accident, by and large. You need to have a reason, and job is the biggest source of reason for that change. And as a result of that change, the people who move here from other states resembles the average American, and the average American is more diverse racially and ethnically than the average Minnesotan. And people move here from other countries, and the people who move here are more likely to be of different racial and ethnic and cultural language backgrounds. That as a result, Minnesota is changing, and changing already fairly dramatically. And that change is first being felt in our K-12 age populations, because see, it's young people who tend to move long distances and cross significant boundaries. It's young people who moved out of the rural areas to the center, to the cities, and built this wonderful place we call the Twin Cities. That next movement of young people is coming from other states and other countries, and we have people moving here from, well, over 160 different countries to Minnesota, and from virtually every state. Minnesota is undergoing change, and the current educational achievement levels for the children of these people that are migrating raises some concerns and some cautions. Now, if we look at our K-12 age, our public school enrollments in Minnesota, what we find is that the majority white students are declining, and declining fairly sharply. This was fully anticipated. This is not a surprise. We've known that this would happen, that number is dropping sharply. But the overall enrollment is dropping at much less, because what we are seeing is dramatic changes in the students of color in all of our schools. And the change is occurring first in our school districts. The concern begins to be raised when we look at school achievement. Now, there's many ways that you can look at school achievement and different ways you can calculate graduation rates and test scores and things like that. I would argue that virtually every one of those methods shows almost exactly the same result, that there are large differences by race and ethnicity, also by other factors such as gender and cultural background and things like that. There are large differences in the achievement levels of young people. It will be difficult to build a world-class, world-competitive workforce that will keep our top corporations here in Minnesota. It will be difficult to build that on the backs of a high school graduation rates in the neighborhood of 60%. That these are, while Minnesota has one of the highest graduation rates in the nation, much of the reason why we have one of the highest graduation rates in the nation is that our student body right now is not very diverse. It is becoming rapidly more diverse, and our difference from the rest of the country is changing. And our prosperity, as we pointed out, has been historically based on a highly productive workforce and a workforce that is highly educated and highly trained. And what we're seeing is that younger people in the workforce are less likely to have completed high school, whether they grew up here or came in from another state or another country. They are less likely to have completed high school than older members of the workforce, who many of whom are thinking about retiring. Think about a baseball example. If you're playing baseball and you're a batter and you hit the ball and don't get to first base, you are out. If you don't graduate from high school, you will be relegated to competing with the lowest wage, lowest benefit workers of the world. We have an increasingly global economy. We do not want our children competing there. We do not want our economy competing there. We want our economy to be competing at the highest level of productivity in the world.
Let me remind you of something that I told you a little bit earlier, and that was that we now have more than 90% of the workforce has a high school education. Then I want you to go back and look at the chart just before the one that that's on the screen now. It shows what the majority white high school graduation rate is. It's less than 90%. We're not even replacing our workforce with the majority white population, let alone with the minority population. We keep coming back to it, but productivity is so important here that I want to give you a quick example to talk about here. And let's just think about a simple firm, a bakery. And you can have productivity occur because people working in the bakery get more familiar with their job, so they're able to do the job more skillfully. You can have productivity occur because the bakery buys bigger mixers, they buy bigger ovens, and so they can produce more product that way. Capital investment. And you can have productivity occur because somewhere a new recipe for bread is developed, and it takes 2 minutes or 3 minutes less to prepare that recipe than it would otherwise. All of those are ways that you can have productivity. You can have productivity by investing in human capital. You can increase productivity by investing in physical capital. And you can have an increase in productivity by investing in research and development so you promote technological change. Now, some of you may have seen a report in the paper on Saturday on the front page of the business page, which I think deserved more visibility than it got. It was really disturbing. It talks about how Minnesota's investment in research and development has changed over the past couple of decades. And what you see is that the state is not investing not state government, but the state of Minnesota is not investing in research and development anywhere near the way that we should. If you look at total academic R&D spending in 1972, we ranked 19th. Now we rank 26th. Well, you can say, well, that's not too bad. There are big states and so on like that. California wouldn't expect that we'd invest the same amount as California. We're kind of in the middle of the pack and so on like that. It's not bad. If you look at what's happening by academic R&D investment per capita or academic R&D investment per dollar of GSP, the results are pretty frightening. So that's something else we need to be thinking about as we're going out trying to promote productivity. Still, though, Tom and I would both argue, that workforce development is really going to be the key to Minnesota's economic future. We're not going to have an increase in the number of workers that's going to just propel the economy. In fact, we're going to have more dependents than we are going to have workers. What we have to be concerned about is we have to be concerned about the quality of the workforce. We have to be concerned about the quality of the new workers, the people that are entering the workforce for the first time. We have to be sure that we're going to allow them to make full use of their talents as we go on. But we also have to be concerned about the incumbent workforce. Now, I can tell a lot of you, the people that are fiscally astute here, you're going to say, wait a minute, this is going to cost money. And you're right, it is going to cost money. But the good news is that Minnesota's economy is going to grow. And over the next 10 years, the amount of growth that we're likely to see in the Minnesota economy may surprise you. It actually surprised me when I first did this. What we know is that if things go like we expect, that real, and when economists talk about real, what they mean is inflation adjusted, real per capita personal income is likely to grow about 25% over the next decade. Now think about it for a minute. What does that mean? Well, what it means is we're going to be able to buy 25% more stuff. And I don't know about you, but I don't have room for 25% more stuff in my garage. Yeah. Yeah, so some entrepreneur there says, yeah, here's a business opportunity. Okay. What it means is for a person that's working a normal 8-hour day, it's like every day at the end of your term, you get a 2-hour bonus. It's really amazing. And if you look at it, it happened last decade too. This isn't something that's unusual. We had that kind of growth in the last decade as well. Productivity, that's what's going on. That's what drove this. Here are some more numbers real quickly. Real per capita disposable income, after tax income, expected to grow by about $7,500 by 2016. Household wealth forecast to grow by 60%. Now, that's a nominal number. That's not adjusting for inflation, but with my portfolio, I'll take 60% growth, nominal or real, either one. It's inflation adjusted. Some medical costs are already included, the medical costs that are consistent with the levels of care that we already are consuming. And Minnesota could do better. We've done better than the national economy over the last 50 years. We could do better in the next decade. This is the real story. This is the other side of the productivity story. We as a society, we as a state, are going to have the resources to do whatever we want to do over the next decade. Now, it's not that we won't have to make choices. We're going to have to make choices. But the choices that we have to make aren't what are we going to do without in order to maintain this minimal level. It's what are we going to do in addition to what we're already doing. And here, there are a lot of choices we can make. We can choose to consume that money. We can choose to invest it. We can choose to invest it in infrastructure. We can choose to invest it in human capital. We can choose to invest it in research and development. It's our choice. It's our choice. What will we do? And here demographics come into play again.
And we've shown this graph before, but I'm going to add one more line. Before we look just at the 65 and older and the 18 to 24-year-old age, and I'm going to add the school age, the K-12 age population on that. And what we see is that by 2020, this has already been mentioned, but by 2020, the 65 and older line passes the K-12 age population, both in Minnesota and the United States. Again, Minnesota in this is almost exactly the national average. And while you may think of this as three components of our population, you can also think of this as the three largest components of state government budget: higher education, K-12 education, and social and health care for an aging population. That these are large components of state government budget, and some of it is on autopilot. Some of this, maybe a big chunk of it, an increasing chunk of it, is on autopilot, and these budget priorities will change unless we make conscious decisions to do otherwise. That the aging of society will impact both our public and private spending. That healthcare costs are going to increase, they will certainly increase. That's not really a question. The question is how much. That there will be shifts in government priorities to issues of aging and health, and that's almost certain to occur. That we also have a change in expected changes in voter attitudes. Demographers and economists and political scientists have been talking about older voters being more fiscally conservative for at least the last 35 years that I'm aware of. This is not a new issue, but we are beginning to see some of the full implications of some of the changes, and our state tax base will certainly be impacted as more and more people reach retirement age. While the issues that we've laid out here can be challenging, we've already pointed out that for every challenge, there are also wonderful opportunities. If you have too much stuff for your garage, build more garages. That's a great business opportunity. Remember, Minnesota is starting from a position of strength. We are one of the most successful places in the country. We are a fortunate place. We have choices. We have choices that many other states do not have at this time. The real issue is not whether or not we have the choices. The real issue is what do we choose to do.